Moving stalls, seize up and halt, hold and be still.
I beg your pardon, the man next to her said. Were you speaking to me?
He cut off as, in a widening circle within range of Irene's voice, the moving stalls all came stuttering to a halt, jointed legs going abruptly rigid and stopping where they were. The general swirl of people and stalls was thrown into sudden and shocking confusion, far more dramatic than the earlier printing incident. People who'd been preparing to zig suddenly found themselves forced to zag. Piles of goods teetered on the edges of stalls and were barely saved from sliding off, or not saved in quite a few cases, adding to the general uproar. Before anyone could come to awkward conclusions about the center of the circle, Irene darted forward and elbowed her way past several complaining clots of shoppers. She could hear the grinding whir of gears and levers struggling with disobedient mechanical legs. The flow of people carried her forward out of her cul-de-sac, leaving her pursuers trapped behind the barricade of frozen stalls, and, she hoped, being trampled underfoot by angry shoppers. Irene headed for the nearest opening in the maze of tables, then from there to an alleyway. After a bit of rearrangement to veil and jacket, it was out onto the main street again, heading back and round towards Holborn, with nobody following her this time. With each step, the reality of the message from the library sank more deeply into her guts. Beware Alberich! Beware Alberich! Beware Alberich! She didn't need this. She really didn't need this. She was already in the middle of a complicated mission, with a trainee to handle on top of it all. She'd given Kai an optimistic summary to keep his spirits up, but that didn't mean that anything was going to be easy. And now this. Alberich was a figure out of nightmare. He was the one librarian who'd betrayed the library, got away with it, and was still somewhere out there. His true name was long since lost, and only his chosen name as a librarian was remembered. He'd sold out to chaos, he'd betrayed the other librarians who'd been working with him. And he was still alive. Somehow, in spite of age and time and the course of years that would afflict any librarian who lived outside the library, he was still alive. Irene found herself shivering. She pulled her shawl more tightly around her shoulders and tried to rein her thoughts back from a train of needlessly baroque images. Stupid thoughts. After all, it wasn't as if Alberich was on her trail at this very moment. Was it? The message from the library couldn't have been faked. It must have been sent by one of the senior librarians, probably Coppelia. It wouldn't have been sent unless things were urgent, which meant that she had to assume that Alberich was in the area. Worst case scenario. She glanced back into a shop window. Nobody seemed to be following her. She needed to talk to Dominic, urgently, but the British Library would be shut at this time of night. He'd be at home, the address being somewhere in the papers Kai was safeguarding. Tomorrow morning would be easier. For the moment, she and Kai had to find a new hotel and go undercover. Irene wanted to go very deeply undercover. She wanted to go so deeply undercover that it had taken an automated steam shovel to excavate her out of it. She also had to decide how much to tell Kai. It was too dangerous to leave him in the dark, not to mention simply unfair. But at the same time, she didn't want to panic him. After all, look how panicked she was herself. One panicked person was quite enough. Two would be overkill. Possibly he'd be ignorant enough not to realize just how bad the situation might be. Possibly he wouldn't have heard the horror stories that had been traded round in quiet alcoves about some of the things that Alberich had done. And possibly, Irene decided, as she came into sight of Holborn Tube Station and saw Kai loitering under a street lamp, pigs would fly, which would at least mean bacon for breakfast. Oh well. Hotel first. Dramatic explanations later. Chapter 7.
I don't want to complain or anything, Kai said, but we're currently holed up in a cheap hotel.
We are, Irene agreed. She sat down and began to work her buttoned boots off with a sigh of relief.
This place isn't just cheap, it's filthy. Kai gestured round at the tatty yellow wallpaper, the dirt-streaked window, the threadbare counterpane on the double bed, the sallow mirror on the rickety dresser.
You can't seriously expect us to, Kai,
Irene said firmly.
You're spoilt. What happened to the shady but useful background? What happened to being a cool street runner who could handle that sort of thing? Have 5 years in the library really softened you up that much?
Kai looked around and his nose wrinkled. Yes, he finally said. They have. He sat down on the very edge of the bed. Is this much deep cover really necessary? Couldn't we, you know, go and hide out at the most expensive hotel in town and claim we're Canadians?
No, Irene said.
She removed one boot and started to work on the other.
Deep cover. For the moment, I want us untraceable. We'll clean up tomorrow and find a nicer place.
Is something the matter? Irene pulled off the second boot.
Oof. She had to tell him. It wouldn't be safe to keep him ignorant. There is a potential problem, she admitted slowly. I don't know that it's an immediate issue.
Kai just looked at her.
I had an urgent message from the library. The next few words were difficult to say, and even more difficult to keep calm and reasonable. It warned me to beware Alberic. You can pour me some of that brandy now.
Kai's hand halted halfway to the brandy bottle, on Irene's list of essential supplies.
Wait, he said slowly. When you say Alberic, do you mean the one who's supposed to be...
He trailed off, leaving it hanging. And, Irene noted to her displeasure, not pouring her brandy either.
No, Irene said. I don't mean the one who's supposed to be. I mean the one who is. Not that I've ever met him, and with any luck, we won't have to, and this is just a precaution, she hoped. Now, can I have that brandy?
He's real, Kai said.
Still no brandy.
He's recorded in the library. How could he not be real?
Kai looked blank.
He could be fictional.
Irene gritted her teeth.
No. He was formally marked for the library, given the initiation and everything. That's why he can't go back there. It'd know he was there. But it proves that he is real, that he's not some sort of urban legend, like the thing about the pipes and the tentacle monster. That had been one of the popular ones when she was a trainee.
The logic was that if rooms of the library could be connected by the plumbing, then there was some sort of dark central cistern with a huge tentacle monster living in it, which A told librarians. And of course, it was all covered up by order from on high. She and other trainees had spent several hopeful hours rapping on pipes and trying to pass messages or find tentacles.
Brandy?
She finished. Kai finally remembered to get up and open the bottle. He splashed a bare quarter inch into a battered china cup and offered it to her.
Thank you,
Irene said, and knocked it back in one gulp, then offered the cup for a refill.
A bit more this time, please.
Kai stared at her. Are you sure you're all right?
It's been a busy evening, Irene said, and I'm going to be sitting up for the next few hours, studying the local language listings that Dominic gave us. You can get some sleep.
But we ought to tell Dominic at once. After all, if Alberic's here, it proves how important the book is. And we should warn Dominic.
How?
Irene inquired. She'd decided a while back that Socratic questioning was a good idea, because A, it got students thinking for themselves, B, sometimes they came up with ideas she hadn't thought of, and C, it gave her more time to think while they were trying to find answers.
We can go to the British Library. Oh, wait. It won't be open at this time of night.
It won't, Irene agreed. Which is going to be annoying if we need to sneak back in there at some point to get back to the library. And he didn't give us a home address.
It should have been in those papers he'd given them. It wasn't. Which, a niggling voice at the back of her mind pointed out, had been careless of Dominic. Almost to the point of outright dereliction of duty in such a dangerous location. She might have needed his help urgently.
We can use the language to contact him, Kai said triumphantly.
Irene considered that.
I can make a construct and send it to warn him, but it will need to travel and find him.
Magic, Kai said.
Not my field, Irene replied. Are you any good at it?
I can command some spirits, Kai said modestly. But I haven't had time to introduce myself to any local ones. I wouldn't want to try that unless we have no other choice.
Irene nodded. And Dominic did say they could be dangerous. So we'll go to the British Library in the morning and talk to Dominic in person then. The library will have updated him in any case, just as they did me. It's not as if we're leaving him in danger. This isn't a bad horror film. She smiled, hopefully reassuringly.
Oh, Kai said.
He glanced at the small case by the door with the documents in it.
So, he said, with a little too much casualness, can you show me some of the language words in there?
I could, but it wouldn't do you any good. Irene put down the cup. It won't be any different from how it is inside the library. It still won't look like anything other than normal speech to you.
Did it hurt?
Irene blinked at the change of subject. Did what hurt?
Getting the library mark.
Kai threw himself back down on the bed. It creaked under him.
If that's the only way to understand the language.
Yes, and yes. Since Kai evidently wasn't going to bring it over to her, Irene got up and walked across to fetch the case. Look, you should get some sleep. There's no point us both staying up all night. Kai rolled onto his front, resting his chin on his hands, and looked up at her.
Irene, he said,
and there was something low and stroking in his voice.
When you say sleep, do you really mean just sleep?
Irene looked at him, the case in her hands, and raised her eyebrows pointedly. Yes, I do really mean just sleep.
But you, me, we're sharing rather a small space, don't you think?
He stretched, and she noticed his trousers clung appealingly tightly.
You're not feeling some kind of loco parentis responsibility towards a novice, are you? Is that what it is?
No, Irene said briefly. But it's irrelevant in any case.
But
look, she cut him off before he got any ideas about standing up and taking her in his arms or anything like that. Kai, I like you. You're extremely handsome, and I hope we'll stay good friends. But you are not my type.
Oh,
he said. She walked back, sat down, and opened the case, starting to thumb through the papers inside.
What is your type?
Kai asked hopefully. Irene looked up to see that he'd removed his cravat, unbuttoned his shirt, and was showing a triangle of muscular, smooth, pale chest. She could imagine what he would feel like under her fingers. She swallowed. Do we really have to do this?
I'm not just trying to flatter you, Kai said.
There was a thread of annoyance in his voice now.
But I like you. I think you're clever and witty and charming, and I have a lot of respect for you. And believe me when I say I am marvelous in bed.
I do believe you, Irene said, looking for a way out of this. I'm sure that we would spend a very nice evening. But I wouldn't get any study done then.
After the study, Kai said hopefully.
Irene rubbed her forehead with the back of one hand. She was getting a headache. Look, I appreciate you being polite about this. I appreciate you being absolutely charming. And I wish I could be more polite about turning you down. But it's been a long day, and I still have work to do, and you're not really my type. And before this goes any further, my type is darkly dangerous and fascinating, of dubious morality. And yes, this caused the whole problem in the cat burglar scandal that was mentioned earlier, which was deeply embarrassing at the time, and still is. Also, let me make myself perfectly clear that if you repeat this, I will skin you alive. Right? Kai looked at her with big, disappointed eyes.
I would have enjoyed partnering you, he said. Really? You would too.
Allow me to inform you that I am an exquisite bed partner, Irene said, a little sniffily. I have travelled through hundreds of alternates and sampled partners from many different cultures. If I took you to bed, you certainly wouldn't be complaining.
Kai gave her another deep stare from those drowning dark eyes of his. She sighed.
But right now, we have a book to find, I have to study, and you need to sleep. Please?
Eventually he did, and she could work in peace, with only the occasional side thought about tempting offers and beautifully contoured muscles. A couple of hours later, with Kai soundly asleep, Irene put down her papers and rubbed her sore temples. She'd just memorized a dozen different adverbs for the way that an airship moved, and 15 adjectives for types of smog. She was due a break. Unfortunately, thought came along with it. Alberic was known to be allied with some of the Fae. He'd gone to them when he first went renegade. Now he allegedly played on their various factions with the energy of a lunatic musician with a pipe organ. The few fragmented reports that the library had on him, at least those that were accessible to juniors like herself, suggested that he was after immortality. She stared at the papers without really seeing them. Immortality. The library gave an effective sort of immortality. Or at least a continued life until the person involved grew tired of it. As long as a library initiate bearing its mark was inside the library, they didn't age. Out in the multiple worlds, one grew old, but inside the library, aging just stopped. She'd spent years in the library herself while she was training. She'd had years of experience that didn't show anywhere obvious, except perhaps her eyes sometimes. But she tried not to think about that. That's why the library hierarchy functioned as it did. Junior librarians operated out in the divergent worlds while they still had the years to spare. Once they grew old, they retreated to work in the library for as long as they chose, with only the occasional trip outside if necessary. These were people like Capalia and Kashe, spending their days in the endless rooms, finally able to get their research done properly. Some librarians just lived on, until they decided that they'd had enough, or went out into the alternate worlds to finish their days somewhere that they liked. The library paid for it, however expensive or exotic, on the grounds that nothing is too good for those who've spent their lives in service to the library. Of course, it was similarly aged librarians who voted for the funding on that sort of thing. Irene wasn't going to start thinking about that sort of thing yet. She had years in the field ahead of her yet. Decades, things to do, people to see. But then there was Alberic. He'd left the library 500 years ago. There was no way that he could still be alive by the library's normal methods. He must have made some sort of bargain with the Fae, creatures defined by their impossibility. Common horror or fantasy literature supplied half a dozen unpleasant ideas on how Alberic could still exist. Though, some of them might not count as living. And what did he want to do with that continued existence? The library could use unique books to connect and bind itself to particular alternate worlds. But what could someone else, someone from outside the library, do with those linking books? It wasn't an area within which junior librarians had been encouraged to speculate. The best answer she could come up with at the moment was, something bad. After all, what might it imply if Alberic could influence whole worlds simply by owning certain key texts? Irene seriously considered another brandy. This was all growing overly complicated. Bradamant wanting to take over the mission, the Fae involvement, Alberic. And then there was Kai. She looked across at his sleeping form. He didn't snore. Kai breathed gently and regularly, like an advertisement for particularly comfortable pillows, and he'd managed to fall asleep in just the sort of position that might require her to smooth his brow or wake him with a kiss. As for that earlier shift of persona from street punk to semi-aristocrat, he'd handled that detective like a gentleman born, and his current interest in wardrobe, seduction, and general adventure really didn't fit the young man who'd introduced himself to her as Capalia's latest student. There was something off. Capalia had to have noticed it herself. Irene realized that she was tapping her finger against the papers. She deliberately stopped herself, habits were dangerous. They could get you killed. Had Bradamant's interest in Kai been suspicious? Irene had her own history with Bradamant, which she certainly wasn't going to discuss in front of Kai, or behind Kai, or in any place where Kai might end up hearing about it. The woman was a poisonous snake. No, that was unfair to snakes. Irene had been Bradamant's student once, and she knew exactly what it meant. Get used as a live decoy, somehow miss any of the credit but catch all the blame, then spend years putting your research credentials back together again after the blot on your record caused by rejecting an older librarian's offer to take you out on another mission. With an effort, she stopped herself tapping on the papers again. It was just 3 in the morning. She could hear distant church bells and clock chimes drifting through the fog outside. Another hour of study, then she'd sleep, and Kai could keep watch. She was paranoid enough to want someone keeping watch, however unlikely it was that Alberic or anyone else could find them here. Paranoia was one of the few habits that was worth keeping. At 8 o'clock the next morning, the doors of the combined British Museum and British Library opened. Irene and Kai joined the crowd of people heading in. Luckily, nobody was in the mood for talking at that hour of the morning. People kept their gazes fixed on their boots, stared blankly ahead, or buried themselves ferociously in notebooks. The Department of Classical Manuscripts was open, but Dominic Aubrey's office was closed. The door was locked, bolted, and possibly even barred on the inside, for all that Irene could tell. She didn't remember noticing a bar when she'd been inside, but she might have missed it. "Shall I pick the lock?" Kai asked, as they, not for the first time, straightened from peering at it and did their best to imitate hopeful students, just in time to smile at passing staff. "I'll do it," Irene said. "He may have put some sort of wards up against physical or sorcerous lockpicking, but he can't ward against the language." She paused. "Stand back."
"Oh?" Kai said, doing as she'd told him.
"Well, wards are one thing, but traps and alarms are something else." She ignored Kai's expression of sudden dismay. Really, he should be grateful. He was getting an excellent education, and quickly went down on one knee. There, she informed the door in the language that all seals and bars on it were undone, all locks and bolts opened, and all wards gone. It swung open quietly when she set her hand on the handle. She beckoned Kai in quickly after her and closed the door behind him. The room was just as it had been yesterday. Early morning sunlight came in dimly through the windows, muffled by the fog beyond, and gleamed on the gold leaf and glass cases. The library door itself was secured by means of a chain and padlock, the chain running through both the door handle and a metal link set into the wall. It would be useless to prevent anyone coming from the other side, as the power of the library would prevail, but it was efficient enough to stop people trying it from this side.
"Irene," Kai said uneasily.
"Yes?"
"If the door out was bolted from this side, and if the door to the library was padlocked from this side too, how did anyone leave the room?"
"A good point," Irene said. "Encourage useful habits of thought. There must be a secret door here somewhere, or he left through sorcery."
"So, can you use the language to find the secret door?"
Irene sat down on the chair behind the desk. It was clearly Dominic Aubrey's personal chair. It yielded with the ease of long use, with a single graceful creak, and smelled of snuff and coffee. "Not exactly. Field exam, tell me why."
"Oh, that's not fair," Kai started, then looked at her expression and shut his mouth to think. "Okay," he said a moment later. "Sorry. I think I've got it. Everything within range of the language reacts to it unless the command or sentence specifies otherwise, right? So if you just tell everything within range to unlock..."
Irene nodded. "Then I'll end up opening the cases, the drawers, the cabinets along the wall there, the padlock on the library door, and quite possibly my handbag and your wallet and the windows while we're at it. It's a reasonable suggestion, but it won't do unless we have absolutely no other choice. Now, tell me why I'm not going to use sorcery.
Kai thought, then shrugged.
Because Dominic may have put wards on any secret door, which will blow up when you use sorcery to detect them?
Actually, no. Irene leaned her elbows on the desk. It's because I'm bad at sorcery.
What?
But anyone can do sorcery.
She lifted her eyebrows.
Seriously, Kai said. You must be joking. Sorcery's one of the simplest skills around. Even my youngest brother could command the simpler spirits and invoke the elements. You're not telling me that...
He ran out of words mid-sentence, with the uneasy look of someone who'd spotted that he'd said the wrong thing. Irene had noticed it too.
Your youngest brother, she repeated softly.
Irene,
If I'd had a family, you told me before.
She remembered the conversation in the library, as forgetting was the last thing a fully trained librarian should do. Memories were as important as books, and almost as important as proper indexing.
Kai, you've been lying to me about some things and hiding others. I know it, and you know it.
She wished that she could run her hands through her hair in the way that he was doing now. But she was the older librarian, and he was her apprentice, and she couldn't afford to show weakness. She had to be in control. She liked him, and she didn't actually like many people. And she didn't want to accuse him. She didn't want to drive him away. Do you want to talk about it?
He drew himself up and stood in front of her, suddenly appearing very tall and yet somehow fragile.
I can't, he said.
You can, Irene corrected him. But it seems you won't.
Irene,
he swallowed.
I swear to you that it has nothing to do with the current situation. By my name and my honor and my descent, I swear it.
Saying, as far as you know, was the obvious response, but it would have made light of his obvious struggle and sincerity. And he was sincere. Irene was certain of that. Of course, that didn't necessarily mean that he was right, or that he wasn't an idiot.
She sighed. I accept your word, and won't ask for more unless the current situation dictates otherwise. But I will have to tell Capella about this, Kai. I can't keep it secret.
I'd expect that, Kai said.
He raised his eyes to look nobly at the opposite wall.
I would have known that you would report it, saying as...
Assuming she doesn't already know, Irene said thoughtfully.
Kai twitched.
She can't, he said,
in a tone that was more desperate hope than genuine conviction.
If I can spot something being odd in 2 days, then she can probably notice it in 5 years.
Irene stood up and patted Kai on the shoulder.
Relax. Now let's find this secret door. I'll check the cabinets on this wall, you check the shelves on that wall.
She could hear Kai muttering behind her as she walked across to check the ranks of cabinets. They were full of carefully pinned down pages, shards of pottery, pens, quills, typewriters, and other bits and pieces that obviously hadn't been dusted for at least a couple of years. The locks on the cabinets were good, but the wood was dry and fragile. Any serious thief, such as herself on more than one occasion, would simply have broken the frame or cut out the glass rather than trying to pick the lock.
Kai sneezed. Found anything? She called across, not bothering to turn and look.
Only dust, he said, and sneezed again.
Irene went down on her hands and knees to check the bottom edges of the cabinets, looking for traces that they'd been moved. If this didn't get her anywhere, then she'd forget about confidentiality and go through the drawers of Dominic's desk. She didn't seriously expect him to keep anything incriminating or important there, but it might at least give them his home address. Failing that, she and Kai could check with the British Library Administration. Failing that, Kai sneezed again.
If there's that much dust, she called across, then any secret doors should be fairly obvious.
It's not just dust, Kai said.
He took a step, paused, took another step.
There's something in this room which smells odd.
Irene gave up on the cabinets and pulled herself to her feet, brushing off her skirt.
What is it?
Kai sniffed.
I'm not sure. Spicy, salty. Somewhere around here.
He wandered along the bookcases, sniffing again. She followed him, fascinated by this new approach to finding secret doors.
Got it.
Kai leaned in and pointed at the small cabinet at the end of the shelves. Half a dozen volumes of The Perfumed Garden Summarized for the Young were piled on top of it, but the actual door of the cabinet was accessible, if locked.
Let me see.
Irene went down on her knees again to check it.
Looks like a normal cabinet. Anything odd about the lock?
Not that I can see, Kai replied, joining her at ground level. Do you want to open it, or shall I?
Oh, allow me.
Irene leaned in and ordered the lock open in the language. The cabinet door didn't open.
That's interesting, she said.
How can it not open? Kai asked.
The easiest explanation is that it's sealed by some other method, on top of the lock, Irene explained. Something that's not obvious, so I wouldn't know it's there to tell it to open. Or then again, you were saying you could smell something. On which side of the cabinet is the smell strongest?
Kai gave her a look suggesting that he wasn't here to sniff on her behalf, but complied after a moment.
This side, he said, tapping the right-hand panel of the cabinet.
Right.
Irene shuffled round to get a better look at it, then prodded carefully at the corners and the inlaid design.
Yes, thought so. When is a door not a door?
Kai just looked at her.
When,
Irene said triumphantly,
it's a fake. Here.
She pressed the upper corners simultaneously, and the whole side of the cabinet swung open on a hidden hinge.
There. Now.
She would have said more, but a powerful stink of vinegar hit her, and she rocked back on her knees, fanning the air in front of her nose.
That's rather raw, Kai said. Is it a library way of preserving documents?
Not one that I've ever heard of.
Irene regained her self-control and drew out the contents of the cabinet. It was a single canopic jar in the ancient Egyptian style.
So, let's see what's in here.
Should we?
Kai asked.
Kai, Irene said gently. If Dominic really wanted to keep this secret from us, he wouldn't have hidden it and then been late for work, knowing we'd snoop around.
Just purely for information. Kai said. Are all librarians like this over private stuff?
Irene didn't dignify his question with an answer. Besides, he'd learn better. A librarian's mission to seek out books for the library developed, after a few years, into an urge to find out everything that was going on around one. It wasn't even a personal curiosity. It was a simple, impersonal, uncontrollable need to know. One came to terms with it. She lifted off the canopic jar's stylized jackal head lid.
There's something in here, she reported.
Kai forgot moral scruples and leaned in closer.
What is it?
Some sort of leather.
Irene rolled back her sleeves and pulled it out. It was larger than it looked. Thin, delicate stuff with long trailing attachments. She shook it out to get an idea of its full length and shape. Then froze, horrified. Behind her, she could sense Kai's stillness and shock. It was a complete human skin, all in one piece, with a single slit down the front from chin to groin. It was Dominic Aubrey's skin.
Chapter 8
Kai drew back with an indrawn hiss, raising his hands in front of him like claws. The skin lay there on the floor, limp and wet, staining the polished boards with vinegar. Irene swallowed, holding on to the smell of the vinegar to keep her own nausea at bay. Dominic Aubrey's features looked so different like this. The flattened face was recognizable, but lacking shape, spirit, and the congenial warmth that had animated it just the day before.
"Is it some sort of fake?" Kay demanded.
Irene flipped it over. The library mark ran across its back in a complex tracery of flourishes. It was unmistakable. The language couldn't be faked, even if someone tried to copy it. She felt the mark across her own shoulders twitch in a kind of sympathy.
No, she said, numbly. It's real. But it's not possible for someone to shed their skin like this. I mean, it may just be possible to remove your skin, if you consider some wilder fictional texts. But you couldn't remove the library's mark and survive.
Alberic, Kai said. Irene didn't need to ask him what he meant.
Certainly possible, she agreed. Even likely. But there's the Fae to consider as well, and there may be other factions at work.
Right, we have to report this.
Kai sighed deeply in relief. I was afraid you were going to say that we had to investigate it ourselves.
Don't be ridiculous, Irene said briskly. We may collect fiction, but we are not required to imitate the stupider parts of it. And let's hope we don't just get told to investigate this mess without backup anyway. First things first. We'll hide this thing again, then I'll open the door to the library.
The handle of the outer door began to turn.
Irene barely had time to think. But I know I locked it.
She hastily shoved skin and jar behind one of the display tables and rose to shield it further with her skirts. Kai managed 2 paces towards the door before it swung fully open. A tall young woman stood there, clutching some books to her chest. She looked at the two of them.
I'm terribly sorry, Irene said quickly. Mr. Aubrey isn't here yet. Can we help you?
The woman stared at the two of them.
I beg your pardon, she said slowly. Who are you?
Her brown hair was looped untidily on the back of her head and smeared with dust, and there were traces of dust and ash on her grey skirt and jacket.
Vermin preventative defense, Irene invented quickly. We're working through all the rooms, looking for signs of infestation. Tell me, miss.
She paused invitingly.
Todd, the woman said. Rebecca Todd. He told me to come in this morning about the Lamia manuscript.
She shifted her grip on her books.
He should be in soon, Irene said. I'm terribly sorry, but I can't ask you to wait inside because we need to deploy some hazardous chemicals while we're testing for silverfish. Would you mind waiting outside in the corridor? We'll be out in a minute.
Of course, Miss Todd said readily.
If Mr. Aubrey does arrive while you're still testing, I'll let him know.
Thank you, Irene said with a smile.
She waited until Miss Todd was safely out of the room before breathing a sigh of relief.
Silverfish, Kai muttered.
Hush, Irene said. We'll be out of here before she knows it.
She knelt down again, avoiding the growing puddle of vinegar, and hastily stuffed the skin back into the jar.
Ugh, I need to wash my hands. Actually, I'll take this with us. Perhaps Capalia or one of the others will know what it means.
She passed the jar to Kai.
You hold this.
Must I? He said, taking it distastefully.
I need to open the door.
Irene walked across to the library door. She remembered seeing the chain last time, but she rather thought it wasn't in use then. Perhaps freed by their own journey through the door. It was clearly for show rather than substance, presumably to discourage outsiders from using it. And, of course, anyone like Irene could just use the language.
Chain open, she said, laying her hand on the padlock.
It didn't explode. It burst open. It unfurled like a chrysanthemum and then fastened onto her palm, spreading across her skin in a slick of white-hot metal. But there was more to it than heat. Through the acute pain, Irene sensed active malice and deliberate will. Behind it all, as she almost lost consciousness, she caught a dazzle of brightness that ultimately faded to darkness.
Irene, Kai was saying,
but she had fallen to her knees and didn't have the space in her head to register his words or his expression, or anything except the blazing pain crackling from her hand to shoot up her arm.
Irene!
The mark across her back flared to life, automatically resisting the invasive chaotic forces linked to the padlock. Order and chaos now battled for authority over her body, and it was too late to recognize this as a trap laid for someone who'd used the language, even though it was so clearly that in hindsight.
She could smell something burning. That would be her dress. Fabric was so flammable.
"Get me loose," she gasped. If only she could break the physical link that held her to the padlock or the forces powering it, that might be enough to let her regain control and finish cleansing herself. Kai closed a hand round her wrist and pulled. He didn't try touching the padlock. The padlock was stuck to her hand. She couldn't even shift the grip that she had on it. Her fingers were locked round what was left of it in a spasm that she couldn't break. Through the agony, she recognized this as a chaos-fueled trap. A normal human being, one not sealed to the library, would already have been warped to something on the verge of possible, or they would have been accelerated all the way into something that couldn't exist in this alternate and outright destroyed. Though a normal human being wouldn't have triggered the trap. She felt her grip slipping. For the moment, her library seal was saving her, but it couldn't last. The two competing forces would burn her out like an understrength fuse if she couldn't break the connection somehow.
"Irene!"
Kai yelled in her ear, as if volume would make a difference.
"Can I get you into the library? Will that help?"
She jerked her head in a shake.
"No,"
she gasped. She couldn't enter the library in this state.
"I'm polluted. Can't."
She tried to think of any teachings covering this, but could only remember it was called the Babblefish Principle, which was no use. And it was hurting. It was hurting. Then a solution came to her. But if the library door wasn't the trap's power source, she was so screwed.
"Break my link to the door. Break the chain."
"Right," Kai said as he pulled the chain taut, trying to wrench out the flimsy-looking loop holding it to the wall by brute force. It shifted, but not nearly enough, and he slipped a knife from his sleeve, trying to prise open the links. One parted with a sudden snap, weakened by the forces flowing to the lock. Then the chain whipped free, and he yanked it through what remained of the original padlock. With the chain gone, the power circuit broke, and the padlock clicked open to fall from Irene's hand to the floor. Irene knelt there, breathing in deep, sobbing gasps, unable to quite look at her hand yet and see what damage had been done.
"Irene," Kai said. "What the hell was that? Are you all right? How did you get it loose?"
She looked up at him. Her vision was a little blurry. Maybe that was why he was swaying.
"It was a trap," she tried to explain. "Set to react to the language and bind to the user. Using the library door as an energy source. That was why it stopped functioning when you broke the chain. It was very energy efficient."
There was a buzzing in her ears.
"Kai, can you hear something? Is it the silverfish?"
"Irene," Kai said. He went down on one knee beside her. "Are you all right?"
Irene looked at her hand. It was red all over the fingers and down the palm.
"Oh,"
she said, in deep comprehension.
"Kai, I think I'm..."
The buzzing was getting louder.
"I think I have to lie down for a bit."
"Irene!"
The world slipped sideways. She felt him catching her as it all went dark. When the lights came on again, they did so slowly and blearily, through a haze of smoke and a drift of odd smells. She was propped at a strange angle, her skirts carefully draped to hide her ankles. The back of a sofa dug into her shoulders, and her head was tilted to one side, hat still pinned to her hair. Someone had pushed a cushion under her cheek. It was horsehair. It prickled. From under her eyelashes, she could make out a room that had been forced into ruthless order by someone who believed in making large piles of things. Books, documents, clothing, glassware. A dream catcher in Lisa Joux lines of wire and ebony spun in the window, turning slowly in a drift of breeze and fog. The walls were also crammed with books, and someone had hung paintings and sketches in front of them and piled small objects on top of the shelves. The place was crammed with stuff. She was surprised there was room for her on the sofa. Her hand ached less now. Someone had slathered it in something wet and wrapped it in bandages, and it lay like a foreign object in her lap. She twitched a finger, stifling a scream, and was pleased to see that it functioned.
"Irene," Kai said from behind her, far too loudly. "Are you awake?"
"Yes," she murmured. "But please don't shout." She pulled herself upright and managed to knock the horsehair cushion to the ground. "Sorry. Where are we?"
"In my rooms." Peregrine Vale stepped forward. "Mr. Strongrock brought you here an hour ago. Miss Winters, you have been the victim of an appalling assault. Do you feel well enough to speak?"
Irene put her undamaged hand to her head. "I'm so sorry. I have a dreadful headache," she said, not entirely untruthfully. "And I don't know what's going on. The last thing I remember is touching this door handle, which was booby-trapped."
"It was some sort of electric shock," Kai said helpfully. He went down on one knee next to her, looking up into her face. "I didn't know what to do. I wanted to try to get somewhere safe while we worked out what to do next, Irene. The only person who I was sure we could trust was the Earl of Leeds here." "Please," Vale interrupted. "Call me Vale. The title is unimportant. What is important now is locating and arresting the fiends who set this lethal trap."
"Well, I..." Irene tried to think what to say next. "I..." Vale held up a commanding hand.
"Say no more. I'm aware that Mr. Strongrock here is your subordinate."
"Oh," Irene said.
"It was blatantly obvious," Vale went on. "Your signals to him in the restaurant, your ability to handle yourself in combat, and his unwillingness to speak while you were unconscious. These all made it quite clear that you were in command of the mission. Miss Winters, I realize that you have your own agenda, but I ask you, I appeal to you, to trust me. I believe that our aims are congruent. I think we can help each other."
"Then Kai's told you..." Irene let the sentence trail off meaningfully. This wasn't what she'd wanted. The man was a near total stranger to her. However impressive his skills were, and while he fitted the character type of nobleman, so he should understand the principles of noblesse oblige well enough, there was still risk. There was always a risk. She was supposed to be manipulator, not manipulated. Her hand hurt. It was distracting her.
"He has told me nothing," Vale said, and Kai nodded in agreement. "He turned up in a cab on my doorstep, with you unconscious in his arms, and he asked for shelter until you were awake again."
Irene pushed straggling tendrils of hair back from her forehead. She didn't have to feign pain or confusion. "I don't think that we're the only ones keeping secrets here, Mr. Vale. The attack on you last night was too deliberately timed to be coincidence." It was a guess on her part, but it hit a mark. His eyelids twitched very slightly. She looked up at him. "I think there's more to all this. The murder, the theft of the book, Belphegor, than just a simple crime of greed. When we met last night, you referred to thefts of occult material. This isn't the only book that's gone missing, is it?" Vale threw himself down into another armchair.
"You're correct, Miss Winters. Oh, sit down, Strongrock. To be frank, I need people that I can trust. The fair folk have contacts at every level of society. My enemies have even more. You two are strangers in London, and though you have no apparent links to the Fae, you have nobody to vouch for you or speak in your favor. I may have reasons to believe that you are reliable." He frowned. "No, leave that for the moment. I will explain my part in this affair, and then perhaps you will explain yours."
Irene looked down at her hand. She wished she could rip off the bandages and see just how bad it was. Surely not a permanent injury. It was that infernal urge that came with an injury, wanting to see how it looked every minute of the day, as if she'd actually be able to see it getting better or worse. And if it did get worse, if she'd damaged herself for life. She couldn't stand the thought of being crippled. but investigating would have broken the flow of Vale's confidences, and she needed his information. "Please," she said softly, looking up from her hand and trying to stop herself fiddling with the bandages. "Please, do go on." Vale interlaced his fingers.
"When I introduced myself as the Earl of Leeds, it was accurate enough. But it is not a title that I care to use often. The dark associations of the city of Leeds and its earls go back to King Edward's reign in the 14th century. I broke from my family under somewhat unpleasant conditions, and have no wish for further connection with them. My father is dead, and I cannot be disinherited. But equally, I have no interest in the family lands, properties, and secrets." "Is that why you live in London?" Kai asked. Irene stole a glance at him. He was leaning forward with an expression of keen interest, but there were lines of clear disapproval in his face. His mouth was pursed in what was very nearly a censorious frown. Vale nodded. "My family have no interest in seeing me, nor I them. They hope that I will not marry, and that the title will pass to my brother, Aquila. However, a week ago, I received a letter from my..."
He hesitated a moment.
"My mother."
The words came with difficulty.
"She wished to advise me of a theft which had taken place, and to ask me, as detective, if not as son."
He fell silent for a moment, staring at his fingers as if they were somehow stained.
"To ask me if I would investigate the matter for her."
"And the subject of the theft?" Irene inquired delicately.
"A book," Vale said. "It was a family journal. That is, not a printed work, but a collection of handwritten notes and studies, herbal references and fairy tales."
"Fairy tales," Kai said slowly. Vale nodded.
"You will see why I am intrigued by Lord Wyndham's murder and the disappearance of his book. Taken in conjunction with certain other thefts which have taken place, it suggests a culmination of events. None of the other thefts have involved murder. And as for the explosion last night beneath the opera..."
"What?" Irene said, coming upright.
"Ah, you wouldn't have read the morning paper yet," Vale said. "The incident bears the hallmarks of secret society activity. A number of cellars were collapsed, but the foundations seem to be undamaged. The police have not requested my assistance."
Irene could almost hear the unspoken "yet."
"So I can only make do with the public reports." "But what makes you think this is connected with the thefts?" Kai asked. "Two things," Vale said. "Firstly, the timing. It took place the very night after the airships arrived in convoy from Liechtenstein. I do not think that I need to remind you about that."
He looked up from his contemplation of his fingers.
"And secondly..."
He hesitated again before continuing.
"My family was involved with a certain society, and they believe it was connected with the loss of their book. The same group met beneath the opera."
"You're being very careful not to name that society, Mr. Vale," Irene commented.
"Indeed I am," Vale said.
"Are they connected to the fair folk?" she probed. Vale laughed, a surprised bark of a laugh.
"My dear Miss Winters, show me a society that isn't connected to the fair folk. I suppose you could say no more than most of them."
"And its connection to Liechtenstein?" she continued.
"Ah, now here we come to the nub of the problem."
Vale frowned.
"I should probably have offered you tea. I do apologize. I always forget that sort of thing. But in any case, from what I've heard, the Liechtenstein fair folk are very definitely not affiliated with... well, let us call them the Society. So the ambassador's arrival, just before the Society was targeted in this way, is notable for its timing."
"You think he caused the explosion?" Kai asked.
"Or the Society? Or were they the targets of the explosion?"
"Possible." Vale waved a hand.
"Possible. Certainly it is worthy of further investigation. And now, Miss Winters, Mr. Strongrock, since I have done my part and told you why I am involved in all of this, I ask you to do the same.
He leaned forward in his chair, his eyes hooded, and Irene wondered how much of what he'd said had been a carefully constructed bluff. Trust me, I've told you everything, really I have. Now it's your turn.
If we are to progress, then there must be some trust on both sides.
Irene held up her good hand before Kai could speak. Before that, Mr. Vale, I'd like the answer to one more question.
Within reason, I am at your disposal, Vale said.
Why do you feel that you can trust us? She asked. Certainly she'd like to cooperate with him. It would make matters much easier. It might even make success in this mission possible, as opposed to out of the question. But it might also be a trap. He might even be Alberich. How could she tell? The very thought made her swallow and made her bandaged hand throb and twinge again.
That is a fair question, Vale allowed. I will be honest with you. I do have a few gifts from my family heritage. One of them is, well, not exactly prognostication, but an ability to tell when something is going to be important in my future. I have used it to advantage in a number of my cases, though I do not discuss it with the public. When I met Mr. Strongrock the other day, I knew, in a way which I fear I cannot describe to you, that he was going to be closely involved with me in the near future. I had the same sensation upon meeting you, Miss Winters. On assessment of your characters, I choose to assume that you will be my allies rather than my enemies. I hope that you will not disappoint me.
Irene glanced at Kai for a moment. He shrugged neutrally. But it wasn't as if it was his decision, in any case. This wasn't a democracy, and he wasn't an equal partner. The decision, the risks, and the potential for disaster were all hers. Vale's story hung together and made sense, which was more than one could usually expect of events. More than that, Irene had the feeling that she could trust him. She wanted to trust him. Should that in itself make her suspicious? And there was nothing that said they had to tell him everything, and this was only a single mission after all. They could leave this entire alternate behind them, and he'd have no way to follow them. There wouldn't be any repercussions afterwards. And, well, if he had been Alberich, then they'd already be dead, just like Dominic Aubrey. She made her decision and leaned forward to offer her good hand. Mr. Vale, I am grateful for what you have said. I believe we can cooperate. Vale smiled briefly and clasped her hand.
Thank you. Then perhaps you can tell me about yourselves.
Irene glanced at Kai. You have already made it clear that you believe we're not English.
Indeed not, Vale said crisply. Nor are you Canadians.
Ah, Irene said, and quickly rephrased her next statement. We are representatives of a society. You will understand if we don't name it, I hope. Vale's smile was a little bitter.
If you can vouch for its good intentions, that will be sufficient.
I can vouch for its non-interference, Irene said scrupulously. We're after one thing, the book that was stolen from Lord Wyndham's house. We arrived here with the intention of purchasing it. Well, that would have been one option. Only to find the man, vampire, murdered, and the book stolen. Now we want to recover it. If together we can discover the truth behind the book thefts, the murder, and the explosion, well, that would surely be the best of all possible ends. And, she thought privately, the library might be interested in those other books as well. Except for the one from Vale's family, that one they could afford to give back, and he'd appreciate it.
And your enemy?
Vale gestured at Irene's bandaged hand. We only have his name, Irene said. It was probably safe enough to give that. Alberich. Vale shook his head.
I know no player in London by that name. But for the moment, yes. I think we can work together. Excuse me, Kai said.
Irene turned to look up at him,
He was clearly holding himself in check with a great effort. May I speak to Miss Winters alone for a moment?
Certainly, Vale said. He rose from his chair.